This is Microphone Check, hip-hop culture from NPR. I'm Franny Kelly.
And I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad. Guess what, y'all? This is a very special Father's Day edition of our show. Our producer, David Luke, pulled together some excerpts from some of our interviews over the past couple of years, the times when our guests spoke of fatherhood.
Each one of these moments happened not because we asked about fathers. It just happened in the course of conversation about totally other things. And to be clear, in these conversations, it's a lot of father figures, not just, you know, nuclear biological dads. We hope you enjoy it. This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
I'm Danny Brown.
What up?
What up, though, man?
What up, though?
Chilling, man.
You guys know each other.
Yes, man. It's the big homie right here, man.
How?
Helped me out way early. Just giving me advice, just talking on the phone with me. That was something I needed for real at that time because I didn't know what really I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to make music. And somebody like Ali, just to even take his time out to even talk to me, that encouraged me to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
So thank you to Ali. You know what I'm saying?
You hear that out there? Go mentor somebody.
That's right. Go mentor somebody. That's real.
What advice did he give you?
Pretty much just telling me, like, trust my heart and just stick to my instincts, you know, and don't care about what's going on in the outside world or what I hear on the radio, what I see on TV, and just do what I felt was true to me. And that's what I took from it, and that's what I did, you know. That was, like, around the time I was making the Hybrid album.
It's, like, 08, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I felt like, yeah.
It was an 08 or 09, something yeah. like that. It's been a minute.
That's a long time.
In rap years. Dog years in rap years.
Yes, this is true. This is true. I rap like I bet my life, cause in all actuality, nigga, I did. You rap like you used to hit the pipe, no, nigga, they ain't crack, that's crackhead
shit. Rap that shit, we'll tell a bitch. And how old are you then?
I mean, I'm 32 now, so I was in my late 20s. I was a grown man then. I was living on my own, you know.
Yeah.
I still feel young, though, so I don't
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
I don't feel old. No, I think that's a state of mind.
Does your mom listen to it? I mean, like, what did you grow up listening to?
My mom listened to a lot of Loose Ends.
Okay.
That was her thing, you know. And my dad, you know, he was house DJ, so he listened to whatever was cracking in the house or the ghetto tech scene, but he started listening to rap. I think his first rap album he just bought and just was listening to all the time was, like, Ice-T Power. Then, like, N.W.A., then Tribe. That just went on from there. Power. Somebody line up the suckers who refuse to recognize the truth. Tie up the punks who refuse to understand the youth. My posse's growing and it's getting larger every day. Detroit, Chi-Town, Pittsburgh, Houston, L.A. Come on, come on, come on, toys. Let's play. Circle the calendar. Perpetrator doomsday. Ice D, fool, man of my own, full grown. I cause havoc when I speak upon the microphone. I'm out. So was that your influence? Yeah, my pops.
That was your introduction?
He picked me. He took me to school and picked me up. So that's how I knew what was ever hot in that world, I guess. Even sometimes he might be listening to something for, like, the new tape that was out. And then when y'all get picked up from school, it'd be a new tape in there. I don't know who this is. Like, dang, who was this? There's some new. I get the kid to show me the cover. I get to look at the credits. Mm-hmm. Like, all right. And that's how it was. But then I started discovering music on my own from my friends because he wasn't playing me that type of stuff, like right. the Spice Ones and the South Central Cartel, just the E-40s and stuff like that. I started finding that from my friends, and it was like, dang, my whole mind was blown on that. 1990 motherfucking folk. South Central Cartel is back in the house. Prodigy, Havoc the Rhyme Son, and the mouthpiece. And we straight serving your ass. Heat. Motherfuckers getting clown, like I said, in the 9-1. But 94 is in effect if you want some. Bump for your truck, bring it on. If it's on, then it's popping. And only for the real price dropping. Yeah, see, we're the same age. I had the same stuff at the same. Okay, see, that's tight.
When I needed to be driven around.
Like when we was dubbing tapes, putting tissue on the top of an old Roy Ayers tape or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. To get the little record button activated.
Make a Spice One tape out of that, you know?
So, what was the first rap show you went to?
I don't know. It was a Fresh Fest or not, but it was Beastie Boys, LL Cool J, and Run DMC.
Wow.
And my pops took me to that.
What was that like? You remember it?
I don't remember it, but he said from the first time somebody grabbed the mic and started rapping, I just was mimicking everything I seen on stage. So I was like in kindergarten, so I can't remember that too much. I remember going, but I just don't remember. I can't even remember the actual show.
Microphone Check from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed.
And I'm Solange Knowles.
How important is dance to R&B?
I mean, just historically, I actually was a ballet dancer. I studied ballet from 3 until 13. But, like, very seriously, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a contemporary ballet dancer. I wanted to go to Juilliard. I remember my father took me there when I was 12, and I was just like, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. And then at 13, my sisters, Destiny's Child, were going on tour. They were opening up for Christina Aguilera, and they had just changed group members, and their whole show was structured around very meticulously this choreography.
Did you know the dances?
No, not at all. But they had just changed members, and Michelle had rehearsed and learned this very particular show, and then one of the dancers actually just up and said that she was pregnant, and she quit, like, maybe a week and a half before the tour left. So my sister was like, oh, you dance, just fill in. Like, by the time we audition someone and teach them all, it's going to be too late. And, like, Michelle really needed to rely on this structure. And so I was like, cool, I'm down. But I had no idea how to do hip-hop dances. I was so awkward, and it was just a lot of pelvic thrusting, and I didn't know what I was doing. And actually, their choreographer, who's still her choreographer, is really hardcore. He's notoriously known as a, like, junior Debbie Allen, you know, like, you need to, like, yelling. And he would always be like, this isn't goddamn ballet. You better, you know. So it was very, very stressful. But I had like a week to learn the whole show. Note you that most of the dancers had like a month. They had been in rehearsal. And I actually did it for about 2 years. So I just had a lot of energy. I was not very great at it. And I had very long braids. They were bright red. So that really helped me. I learned the importance of hair and dance, marriage. So it's like, definitely ingrained in me, the spirit of movement. But it really was just like wanting the show again to have those nuances and to really reflect the music and the era that we were so inspired by for the record. It's very interesting, you know, when we do the movements, and sometimes I can be like singing my little heart out and people are just like, cool. And then I do like a little two-step and it's like, woo!
Yeah, exactly. It just feels, I don't know, more complete. Like, you're really getting something special. It's like, oh, wow, ooh. Versus, oh, yeah, okay. Just broke all the glass in here. All right, cool.
Microphone check. Hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm Cormega.
What up?
What's good, brother?
What's good, man?
Chilling. Happy to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you here. You're legendary, man. Yeah. Life.
Got it.
You know, you tell me, you hear, you know, but what motivates you still after how many albums is it? Like, is this like your...
This would be the fifth real album. This will be the fifth album, and then I got a compilation, Legal Hustle, that's six, and mixtape, so I would say it's like my six.
So 25 years or more, you know, that many albums, so what's your motivation?
To be honest with you, like, the years that I was in the game, I feel like I underachieved. I'm hard on myself, because in the 90s, I didn't put out no album, so I was just there. My first album came out in 2001, so that's another reason why I don't give myself the legend stamp, because I feel like I could have did more. Like, I'm mad at myself. I took five years to make a new album, but you know, I really one of the things that I promised myself is that my daughter is gonna have her father in her life. I didn't want to, you know, I know a lot of artists that's on the road all the time, and you know how it is. So I wanted to be a part of my kid's life, and it was a sacrifice I made, and I hope she appreciates it when she gets older.
You don't hear many fathers saying that.
Yeah, I definitely, because I didn't, for there's two reasons that I wanted to be in my daughter's life. Because one, my mother died when I was young, and I missed her. I missed her more as an adult. There's days in my 30s, in my late 30s, that I cried more than I did when I was preteen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So as you grow older, you see the values of life more. You see the values of certain things. I know the value of a father figure. The things that a father instills in his daughter. So I promised myself that I was going to be a better father than I had. You know, no disrespect to my dad because I love him. And he tried. He did what he could. But I just wanted my daughter's life to be better than mine.
This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
What up? I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
Yeah, man, Tip, man, T.I.P.
What up, Tip?
Thank you for coming. What's happening?
Ambassador Young is the closest thing, I won't even say the closest, he's my mentor. You know what I mean? I mean, he has, in music, I can say, you know what I'm saying, that DJ Tune, Pharrell, KP. But I mean, like, that's the closest thing to, like, a grandfather. A father. My father was his age. My grandfather's still alive. My grandfather, he taught me all the stuff that I needed to know to become the man of respect with principle and morals. Now, in order to articulate myself and to really poise myself as a distinguished gentleman until... You know what I mean? That was brought to me by Andrew Young. You know what I'm saying? Like my granddaddy, fantastic man. I mean, he taught me everything I needed to know to make it to the point where Andy kind of, you know, picked up the baton. And I feel like, man, that's the person that I could see myself patterning my evolution after.
Really?
Yeah.
Leadership, political leadership in that way.
I don't know so much as I don't want to be like mayor. I don't want to, you know, I ain't trying to run for no office. But ultimately, even just as a community leader, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As a social example, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, more like SCLC type.
Yeah, you know, but with the, you know, moving in the right direction with an appropriate purpose. You know what I mean?
I'm LP.
I'm Killer Mike, and we are Run the Jewels.
Yeah, we iller than a nun in a car tag getting double penetrated in a dope spot. Buy two hard pipe in niggas on the orders. I'ma sell it to the soundtrack of Tupac. I'll beat you to a pulp, no fiction. Tarantino flow, new jewels and Vincent. Blow marijuana smoke, no instant. Exhale in the face, innocent, infant.
It's hopefully gonna be just like a 2 Live Crew video.
Yep.
How does, like, because of all the touring, but also because it is so renewing and exciting, like, how do your families feel about all this?
Oh, my wife comes out. We don't have any children together. I brought 4 children to the relationship, so we have 4 children. But luckily, we have built-in babysitters. And, you know, we have grandparents, and we have sisters, and, you know, their moms. So, you know, it's very difficult for me to be away from the children. It really is. But thankfully, because of cell phones and Skype, and me just, you know, calling them and them calling me, we stay together. And when I'm home, my focus is on them. Like, it's, you know, it's hard to get me on the line as quickly when I'm home because I care about making sure that they know they're cared about. And I'm also from a traditional family where fathers work really hard. So it's kind of like in the fabric of my family, the children are taught to understand your dad's going to have to go out to work. Doesn't mean your dad doesn't love you. You guys are still going to be there. Like, I sponsored a trip to Six Flags last week. They sent the picture. They had a great time. But for my wife, it gets difficult because, you know, it's her. We run a business together. A lot of it falls on her. We have a shop, barbershop. We do rental properties and that stuff. So I'm you know, it takes back. For me, it's hard to leave her with that, but I married a champion of a woman. And Shayna, you know, people who follow me on social media always hear me tout about her. She's just wonderful. But it's hard to be away from some of the older members of my family. My grandmother passed 2 years ago. God bless the dead. Her sisters are around. It's difficult not seeing them as much, but I'm out here getting it. You know, and, and my job is to, as a man, you know, traditionally from my family standpoint, is to provide. And I'm going to do that until I can.
No way. I cannot acknowledge the fact that the group of people that I tour with are essentially a spiritual family for me. They are the bedrock that allows me to still be sane when I do get home to my children and wife.
Word up. I'm also going to stab you. We'll laugh about it.
We'll fight close
it's
quarters.
It's going to be hilarious.
We'll do it.
It's going to be completely hilarious. You're going to love it.
Oh, my God. Like, all things being equal, I'm going to assume that you would encourage somebody else if this is the career path, the artistic route they want to go. You'd be like, yeah, go do this.
I told my stupid son that yesterday.
I don't know.
I have a 20-year-old son who he's a bright and brilliant and creative boy. He's in college right now taking courses, and he's in a technical college taking barber's courses so he can, you know, come earn money the easy way, working in his pop shop, hopefully on one. But he looks at me squarely in the eyes, a skater too, yesterday, and says, "Dad, I really want to be a rapper." And I just put my head down. just right in front of the barbershop. I just put my head down in my hand, just exactly the same way my dad did. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I'm going to tell you what my dad told me." And he looked at me and thought he was going to get the most beautiful advice ever. And I said, "They call them starving artists for a reason. I hope you make it. I don't have any help to give you. I have all the advice in the world. But when I was 20 years old, I came to my dad with a demo and said, this is what I want to do. You're coming to me with a want. That's not good enough." And I told him, "If you want to be a rapper, go figure out how to do
it." I did it at 15. Yeah. I mean, you know, like at 15, I told my mother, "Your white son wants to, who just got kicked out of two high schools, has chosen a career in rap." Thank you very much. So I'm going to be a rapper. You know that those crazy people you see on the TV that you're scared of?
I'm gonna be
one of those. So hey, is this cool? You know. Let's just do it. You know.
Yeah,
so I mean, I believe 100% in doing whatever the fuck you want to do.
Absolutely.
And you know, the only alternative, look, if you can figure out an alternative, the only one, the only thing that everyone else is presenting to you is a life of grinding servitude to a ridiculous and permanent lower spiritual experience of working, enslaving, you know, and for someone else.
Yep,
and I hate to reduce it to that, because sometimes jobs are great and sometimes you can do great things. But for the most part, that's your other choice, buddy. So if you can figure something out, great, man.
Yep.
Great.
I hope Malik proves me wrong. Mm-hmm. I really do.
He will. The way that you proved your parents wrong, the way I proved mine wrong.
You know, you hope he will. You don't know he will, but you hope he, because it's hard. My kids haven't had it hard. My kids have been coddled and spoiled. You know what I mean? Like, and he told me that. I know I've been spoiled. Okay. Welcome to the desert, young man. I'll see you when you cross.
He was also getting
$100 from me at the time. I was giving him $100.
Here you go, son. Buy a chain.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a rapper, you're going to need to start spending some money on some stupid shit.
But I'm very proud of him. With that said, I'm very proud of the young man he's becoming, you know, and I hope it works out for him.
I mean, it must be a great feeling to have your kid want to do what you do.
It's definitely not. No, I'm flattered, and I love him. I love him.
Mike knows who he is and what a bastard and weirdo he is.
I am.
And he knows how debaucherous and strange his rap career has been. And he's picturing his child becoming one of him.
Exactly. Just because it's my child and I'm afraid for my child.
Mike knows that he's been a scumbag.
Yeah. My child does not have that in him at all. And you know, you're scared for your children. Every parent is. You're scared for your children.
Shit, I'm scared for your children.
Uncle Jamie, with an uncle like Jamie, you should be.
Nah, I'm going to be the cool uncle, man. I'm going to wait to see what you say, and then I'm going to contradict you behind your back.
That's right. That's what great uncles do.
Yeah.
This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm Big Sean.
Big Sean, welcome. Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming here.
Oh, it's an honor, man. True honor.
Speak about following your heart, and that's where, you know, is your drive, and you're sticking to that. You left a message on your album from your father speaking about people failing you.
Mm-hmm.
And from the heart, and you can whatever conjure up in your mind, but it's the heart that touches the people.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you put that on there?
It was funny because I didn't even realize that conversation was getting recorded. My brother was recording it. It was three of us in a car, and we had just came from like a Wiz Khalifa concert. I was in Detroit just visiting my grandma and everybody, and Wiz hit me up like, yo, I got a concert, you in Detroit? And I was like, just so happened to be in a D. And, you know, we all went out that night, me, my dad, and my brother, just to hang out and get out the house. And so, you know, my dad was in the same room as Wiz, and he might have been a little on a cloud and sipping a little champagne or something, you know. So he was just a little like, you know, feeling the vibe. And then after the show, he was just talking. Like, he was just kept talking, man. We got in the car and he just kept talking and talking and talking. And it was cool to hear him talk. And my brother was recording the whole conversation. And my dad was saying things that this is something we should really pay attention to. I didn't hear my dad like how I heard him when I listened back to the conversation. Like, so it's really hard to live in the moment sometimes and to hear what somebody's really saying to you. But you can really hear it when you listen back on it. Like, for instance, my dad was talking like, you know, I wish me and your brother could just like go on a trip, man, and just like get away from all this, you know, no interviews, no pictures, man, just like, you know, have a good time, man, just us three, you know. I miss you guys, I miss you, you know, you're always gone. And when he went, and in person, I didn't hear it like that. I just kind of heard my dad, you know, talking. Mm-hmm. And I heard it a little bit, but I really felt it when I listened back to it and I was in the studio. And then he also said, you know, Peace, Sean, what did he say? It's no coincidence you are where you are, you know. You talk to people from your mind, but they hear you from your heart, you know. And then that really touched me. It was really got me emotional, almost to tears, because he was really calling out and crying out, saying, like, how proud he was of me, but also saying, like, yo, man, I miss my son, man. Like, yo, you know, be a son. Like, let's go somewhere. Mm-hmm. You got money now, man. Let's, like, go on a trip. You know, I haven't taken my dad anywhere. I haven't done these things. I've been so focused on what I had to do. It's kind of like whack to just realize that so bluntly, but at least I'm glad I realized it in time where I can make that difference. And, you know, I always take my mom on trips with me, like when I got shows to like Japan and stuff. I really don't really take him.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a major part of my life. So that whole conversation came from that moment. And shout out to my dad. He's awesome.
At what point did you have that conversation in your recording for this album? Like, at what point did that conversation occur?
That occurred, like, somewhat in the middle of it, I would say. Like, around, let me think. That must have been towards the end of, that must have been, like, September or something, like, around there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, because it was a few months before my grandma passed. And it was just like, I was like just figuring out the direction of the album, I feel like, as far as like where I was going with it. And my brother never told me, again, my brother never told me he recorded this conversation until I was finishing the album. And he was like, yo, I got this on my phone. I recorded this conversation to you and dad. And I was just blown away at it, you know?
Man, that doesn't make it right. Man, that doesn't make it right. How do you sleep at night? See, the mind is a fucking trickster. It can fuck you around. But your heart will never lie to you. And that's why people love you, Sean, because you talk to them from the heart.
Thanks, Dad.
That's where your magic goes, Sean. It's so mistake that you're where you are right now. You speak to them from your brain, but they hear you from your heart. Because people can see your bullshit. I know I'm talking a lot of shit to
you. No, you're not.
But I want you to hear that, because I'm a great motherfucker, man. Look, and I'm very modest. You know, I am. And I know a lot of shit. They know when you bullshit. They don't even intellectualize it. They feel it. Life is a feeling process.
So, it's a, I think, a beautiful. Like, I almost felt like I wish you would have ended the album with that. Mm. But I'm glad you didn't, you know, in sequence of everything. Only because, one, I'm glad he said that. He dropped that on you. I think that was such a really important message, especially for someone like you. It's funny that you don't see yourself in the position you're standing next to Ye. You know, I'm sure I think you mentioned being at the White House, right? So you're like next to the next to the next to, you're right there. And being in the ranks, it means you're there, you know? So, but where you are, and this is still sort of a, you know, with the third album, it's still sort of looked at as like that young, but it's such a pivotal album in a person's career. Mm-hmm. And that message, you know, him dropping that on you while you're making this particular record and having your own transformation, I think is really powerful. I was happy to hear that, you know, especially just because I think you got a lot of people love you, man. You know, like, you're making music that is from the heart, obviously, and it's hip-hop, it's rap, whatever label you want to put on it, you know, but it definitely touches on the pop sensibilities and is able to just reach across lines where other people's music doesn't really get that far and have that impact. So,
thank you.
You know, so your formula and what you're doing is dope. And then having, you know, you moving forward knowing that people feel you from the heart.
That's great.
You talk kind of big and crazy, you know, at times, but...
Microphone check. Hip-hop culture from NPR. I'm Franny Kelly. I'm
Ali Shaib Muhammad.
Terrace Martin.
Terrace Martin in the building.
Part two.
Part two.
Part two, man.
See,
sequel.
It's happening when we have return guests.
I love that, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we official. We grow.
I'm almost there, baby.
Oh, you there.
I'm there. I'm here.
You're making us a
shoot. Can I cuss on it?
Yep.
Oh, we're going to still not cuss. That's my new thing. Try not to fucking cuss on.
Pulling cast together. Can you talk about the cast you pulled together for the Velvet Portrait?
Yeah, I pulled together a few good friends of mine. I've been playing with the same friends, doing records with them and playing in bands since I was 14. I know a lot of new musicians, but fortunately, my crew is my family, and it's always going to be Robert Glasper on piano. It's always going to be Rubber Spud Seawright on drums. It's always going to be Thundercat on bass, Brandon Owens on bass. My father's on drums on this album, on 80% of the album, which is like a very important thing for me. Layla Hathaway, Tiffany Goucher, a new artist named Rose Gold, one of my best friends, Kamasi Washington. You know, so it's really like a lot. Keon Harold, trumpet player. It's like this record on purpose, I wanted all my friends to shine. Mm. I wanted all the cats that's been doing everybody's record the past 2 years. Let's do, you know, our record. I watch a lot of Steely Dan Steely Dan things. And I wanted to do a record and have all of them involved in it too, you know, because we had just got done having a good couple of years, but. Robert's records, Kendrick records, Kamasi records, Thundercat records. So, you know, we just want to regroup and just give this energy to mine, and we're going to keep doing that situation.
I remember the last time I saw you were talking about going to, what was it, Oklahoma? No.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska.
I went, yeah.
So can you talk about that?
Man, well, when we was doing, I went to Omaha, Nebraska, because that's where my father lives. He teaches out there. So when we were doing the end of To Pimp a Butterfly, not towards the end, we had experienced so much weird things, man. Like one of our closest friends and one of the best musicians in the Los Angeles community, Mr. Zane Musa, passing. And then a week later, my dad almost passed from a heart attack or pneumonia. So it's like, and these were right in the middle of the sessions. And my father raised me, and he's a musician. And one thing that my family, I'm like fourth generation musician. So I don't know life without music at all. I don't know. I can't really remember exactly when I fell in love with music. All I could do is remember when we got closer. You know what I'm saying? So throughout all this crazy stuff, we never took breaks. When we found out we lost our best friend, Zane, me and Kamasi and Thunder, all of us was in one room. We were recording the song Mortal Man. We found out, it hurt, boom, everybody was down. I said, let's go back. We gotta leave the studio at 9 o'clock. I gotta turn this record in by 10. We went back and just did the record. Next day, do the record. Something else happened, I think. A lot of things going on. Then a week later, my father, I get a call saying, your father's dead. Once again, it's like, yo, is he dead? Okay, cool. So let me call you back, because I got to go to mastering by 8 in the morning. And I say that to say my responsibility is really serious. My father taught me it's serious. Being a musician, it gets weird, you know, because you have to give up your whole fucking life to everybody. Everybody. So me and Kamasi was talking like, yo, Zane is gone. Everybody's crying. Oh, crying. And I remember I'm crying, my ears crying. Zane's gone. But I'm looking at Kamasi's chart, and he wrote the wrong line. He wrote it dotted eighth notes when he should have wrote it half notes. And in the middle of hurting for Zane, I said, well, we have to correct this chart right here, because we still got a responsibility to give out. We'll deal with this hurt later on. We had to get this record out. We have a deadline, and this record is important. My father taught me, when you sign up for this shit, you got the Marines, you got the Army. We are the only people that soothe them. The art community are the only people that soothe the people that violently defend us, because they have to sometime, or sometime they don't. But regardless, we are the only community that defends them. We're crazy. We're strong, man. And I don't take that lie. I don't take being a servant lightly with the art shit, because this is my shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So saying all that, even just to go, is like, when I went to Omaha, right when all this death had happened, I went with Zane's funeral, all this stuff. Is my father dead? He's not dead. He's dead. Oh, he's not dead. Okay, cool. He's sick. He can't talk. Bam. Those split seconds, I still didn't even deal with a lot. I just made sure everybody was cool. Went to Zane's funeral. Came back, finished Kendrick record. And then I had a chance to have 2 hours to myself and said, okay, we're done. What's the next step? And I was like, let me go record my father, because I just experienced almost losing him. And he's the best drummer in the world. And it's going to inspire so many fathers and children and other people that may have not talked to their friends and their families and their loved ones forever, to like call, get the picture, say something, and I'm practicing what the fuck I preach now. So that's why when I come up and hug you, it's for real. When I smile and be on my zen, it's to keep from crying, being fucked up, because when you like us, dog, it's fucked up. And that's why we turn to different things for hugs and shit like that. So I went to Omaha, Nebraska, feeling like all like that. I had to give the whole thing, because that's literally what the shit was feeling like, worse though, with vodka. So I went to Omaha, Nebraska.
So, and
Not Ciroc. Not Ciroc that day, but I did drink Ciroc with Puff. Okay. And he spilled it on me on accident.
This anyway, is Microphone Check, Hip Hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly. I'm
Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm Mr. Motherfucking Esquire, a.k.a. the Big Kahuna, a.k.a. Esco Boomaya, a.k.a. the Top Ramen.
What up, man?
What's going on?
Welcome to Microphone Check.
Yeah, thank you for enduring the travel to come see us.
Also. It was nothing.
Are we going to hear your mom on the record?
I might just throw on a song. My father's on my last record. You know what I mean? That was a big important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hadn't spoken to him for like damn near 10 years before he got on my record. So that was like our reconciliation. That was like my first time seeing my dad was him being on my record. Damn. Since I'd seen him since I was like 19 or some shit. So, you know, that was powerful for me. Like, yeah.
Did it continue your relationship?
Yo, me and my dad are like best friends now.
That's amazing.
Crazy, yo. Crazy. It's almost surreal to me sometimes. Because like I didn't ever think I just kinda already put it in my mind, which is bad to do. Like, oh, we're not gonna kick it like that. Like, we're not gonna have that relationship. But like now it's like my best friend. I told him my dad every morning. You know what I mean? Like this morning he texts me, oh, well, you got there safe, man. What's up? You know, like, so it's like the best shit because he just gives you being around my dad. Just sitting in the kitchen with my dad and watching him cook. I get a whole perspective on myself. Like,
yeah,
it's so simple. Like, oh, should I do that, too? You know, when I sit down, I hold my feet that way. Like, because there's so many things that he has of me that I didn't even know of me till I see that I got it from him. Or he'll make a joke. I'm like, that's what shit I would say. You know, or he'll see a chick in the street. Like, that's a chick I would like, you know? So it's just like, damn, it gives you just such a reinforcement of your manhood having your dad around, you know? And it's never too late for that. Like, give a fuck if you 100, you know, y'all in the old folks home together. You gonna get something from that shit. So, but yeah, you know, long story short, I don't even know what the question was anymore, but.
You nailed it.
All right, cool.
That's the coolest part about getting older is that you really realize you don't know what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no idea. Thanks everybody for listening to that. I wanna say happy Father's Day to my dad, Larry Kelly.
And I want to say happy Father's Day to my dad, resting in peace.
And we both want to say happy Father's Day to David Luke.
Yeah.
And maybe the most important one of all, to Cedric Shine, this year celebrating his very first Father's Day.
And all you fathers out there, happy Father's Day.